morning, Rabbi.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning.
How's everybody?
Good.
Are you surviving the softiness?
So far, the dome hasn't rained here in a couple of days. I think at the beginning of the week we had some those downpours, but for the past couple of days. So I thought today, we'd being 9/11, we would take up that topic. And what I mean is the underlying notions, the instinctual drives, things that, you know, the source of the animosity, and a correlation, a direct correlation in the Torah itself. So we turn to the beginning of chapter 11 in Genesis. That's what we'll take up. Only the very first verse. How's the sound over there?
That's good.
Okay.
Sound is good, Rabbi.
Okay, thanks. Sec. Okay, so we're in the beginning of chapter 11 in Genesis, and it reads as follows. And it was that all the earth was one language. And they had one plan, one thinking. And it was that they traveled from the east, and they found a valley, a plain, in the land of Shinar, so they dwelled there. And each man said to his friend, let us make bricks, and we'll burn them thoroughly. So the commentaries say, meaning that the bricks were so well made and so burnt that they would not be destroyed through water or through fire. So they created something which is pretty much indestructible. So this is significant. It says that in verse 3. And then the commentary on the pasuk says, and it was to them that the bricks would be like stone, and the mortar would be to them like cement. And now comes the focus. And they said, let us make for ourselves a city. Let us build a city for ourselves, and a tower, and its head, the top of the tower, reaching the heavens. And let us make for ourselves a name, lest we be scattered upon the face of the earth. So there it says what their intent is. There's a number of things in this verse. And I think we understand it well. We'll see right into, you know, of course, the apparent correlation to 9/11 is that here also you have a history of a tower. So it's not uncommon. It's not something which is new. So from here, I think we can derive a lot of understanding as to what human nature is. And again, you know, man was not reinvented. So anything that happens today, we'll find in the Torah in terms of God's outline of the primary psychological truths and realities and human interaction. We'll find that in the Torah. And I believe here you have the direct correlation. So what? Let's just take it slow and understand what the actual thoughts were that were in these people back then. So first it says that they were making bricks, but they were making them in a specific way that they were going to burn them. And like Ibn Ezra says, that they would be so solid that they would not be destroyed through water or through fire. So no element, nothing on earth was going to have an effect on the bricks that they were going to use to create their city and the tower. And it's also interesting, I just noticed this morning, you know, you can go through an area and you can spend quite an amount of time on it, and then you look at it again the fresh day and you'll see something else. And I noticed this morning that it says that, what does it have to tell us in verse 2 that they traveled from the east? And typically that's what the commentaries say. They traveled eastward. And some want to say that because they didn't find enough space for all of them to dwell. But Mekedem, from where they stand, also can mean from before. They traveled from before, maybe from before others. And you'll see why I'm suggesting that. Okay. Now we understand that they want to make a city, they want to live somewhere. But evidently it was a cohesive group that did this, that had this plan. It wasn't the entire world. However many, you know, people were at that point, but it still is, it says Kol Ha'aretz. So this, according to Ibn Ezra, Noah and his sons were still around, but they didn't go with them. And certainly Shem, who was the son of Noah, and Aver, they were intelligent people. They were monotheists. They followed God. So they also didn't go with these people. So it says that the Kol Ha'aretz, that the whole world spoke one language, that's sensible, because they all came from Noah and from children. But it doesn't mean that all of them traveled. It just says when they traveled, whoever it was, it doesn't say. Okay, so they were fragmenting from a certain part of civilization. And they had a certain plan. So what was their plan? They said a couple of things. They said they wanted to make for themselves a name, right? And keep in mind, they also were using these very durable bricks. And they also said at the end of the verse that lest we be scattered upon the face of the earth. Now, of course, let's take the most significant. So they wanted to create this tower. What was the motivation of creating the tower? We understand a city is a place to live. You don't live in a tower.
Rabbi, it sounds like it's all about their egos. They wanted to be higher above everybody else. They wanted to be greater, and they wanted to be looked up to.
Okay, so, and then how did the tower accomplish this?
Well, certainly when you're living physically above everybody, you're looking down on everybody else.
Well, they didn't live in the tower, as far as I understand.
Okay. Well, they wanted it to be very, very strong, obviously, so that they would be recognized as sort of invincible, that they would be associated with this tower that they built.
Right.
And nobody else had one, so it distinguishes them from everybody else.
Right. They wanted to make something which distinguished themselves. Right, and that's clearly what they said, we should make for ourselves a name. Yeah, and Les is writing the same thing on screen, right. To build a tower, to build something that showed their power, something that would allow their name to be spoken, remembered perhaps, right. So the motivation is an interesting thing. You see, in terms of, you know, a person who follows the Torah lifestyle, so there's no type of, you know, if you see the truth, so then that's it, then you follow it. There's nothing more that you can do to make something true. Now, we can understand now, first step, is the emotion that these people had was an attempt to validate something through a structure. And it seems to be, it is part of the human psyche that we do respect it, something tall. Tall people are, you know, that they carry a certain amount of, well, you know, look at tall person. It's like, as opposed to somebody who's much shorter than us, we innately feel a natural respect. That's what the term of looking up to somebody. These things come from the human emotion. They're not, they aren't expressions that are just created in the vacuum. So there is truth. So when they wanted to build this tower, it was not for a living. Again, like you were saying, both of you were saying that it was in terms of establishing a name for themselves. And evidently, they felt it was insufficient to just have actions that would establish a name, but a tower would. Now, how does a tower do that? Let's go a little step deeper. How does a tower do that?
Rabbi?
Yeah. Right. And how is it, in what way is it strength?
Because it's so tall and strong and it can't be burned down.
Right. Something which is going to last. We'll touch on that in a second. But I believe that one thing, you know, a tower is a structure. So is domination of the physical world. And if you can establish something of this height, certain engineering, technology, it's definitely a testament to those who built it. It's also very public, something which is seen from great distance, which Ibn Ezra says practically there was that thing too, that there was what that element, that shepherds that would go a far distance to find, you know, green pastures for their animals, so they'd be able to see the tower from a great distance and return back to the city. And you see also by, this is why in 9/11, why that was attacked, I believe. There were a number of places that they were attacking, of course. The White House, the Pentagon, you know, the source of political power, the source of military power, as a friend put it, and economy. But I believe more than just economy is that something, these tall structures, and you see that the world today has got this big race. In Bahrain now, they have like the tallest structure ever. Then there's another country, I think, is trying to outdo that one. Well, this becomes like the person with the tallest tower wins. And it's sort of like this unspoken rule that this is really a testament to the advancement of that civilization, of that that culture. So if you have something that's great, that, you know, that tall, that's respected. And the other side of the coin is that if you can knock it down, so it's a blow to that culture, which clearly, you know, the Islamic beliefs, they is very aggressive. It's not just the radicals. If you look at the Quran, there's a lot of very aggressive statements in it. So the towers being attacked is to a blow to our philosophy. Now, why did they have to do that? So the Jew, you never see doing that. The Jew will not have to knock down somebody else's religion. Why is that? What's the difference between the Jew and all other religions?
Because
Well, a Jew accepts the Torah as the truth, but doesn't need to necessarily convince anybody else of it, and doesn't even necessarily need acknowledgement from anybody else, because if they know it, supposed to believe it, then they know it. It doesn't really matter what anybody else thinks or says.
Correct. And additionally, I just add to that there's no threat posed to the Jew of the existence of other philosophies and religions. And I think this is an important insight, that the mindset of an individual who feels he's living the right life, but if he hasn't analyzed it, like every other religion, is not based on intelligence. If they would use intelligence, they would see clearly that they don't have a leg to stand on, that it's not based on anything provable. And so many principles are contrary to human nature, too. But since these other religions are functioning based on emotion, and also culture, and peer pressure, so what happens is that when they see another philosophy extant in the world, so what that does is it now throws a question onto themselves. And this exists in all other religions besides Judaism. A person's living a certain religious lifestyle, but he sees the others. I mean, you had in the Crusades, you had pogroms, you had these cases where the religionists would feel a need to kill, you know, convert or die, unprovoked, innocent people, because this is exactly what was going on here with the Taoists, that the Islamic world was and is still very threatened by another type of a philosophy, a democracy, and all that goes along with it. And the fact that it exists now poses a question. Well, maybe they're right, maybe we're wrong, but they have no way to prove it. So the only recourse that a person who's emotionally based is going to do is he's going to have a holy war, he's going to have to kill the opposition. And in this way, if you can remove the opposition, this, in his mind, might makes right. And if I can get rid of this threat, so that's how they solve the problem. So it really comes down to a self-doubt of the very religious code that you have. Because if you're not in doubt, like the Jew, a Jew knows it goes back to Sinai. We have evidence like any other historical event. And we know it's true, and we know all the other religions don't have it. So like you were saying, Doug, there's nothing really that you need to prove. The proof is already there. We don't have to prove something that's been proved already. It's those that are in doubt that feel the threat and then have to act on it. And you know, I'd say also along with that is that you know this concept of the bricks that they built. You know, what is this? Why is the Torah telling us that they made these bricks that were so durable that they wouldn't be destroyed by water or fire? What is that telling us?
But they had some fantasy about immortality around this thing.
Good, yeah. Meaning, that's also another central theme over here that the Torah is pointing out. That a person has a value, they have to sense that the value is eternal. A person can't value something which is transient, that he thinks is going to come and go. A person senses that. Certain things in life we need to learn. Certain things in life, however, we have an intuition which is on target. The only thing is that most people don't act properly on the proper intuition. They have the right intuition, but then they go astray because they're still following an emotional response to it. So here, what the people were doing, that they traveled and they wanted to make a new civilization for themselves, they had to do something which was eternal. So that's why it's telling us about the bricks that they burnt them. Okay, so it's not out of place here. It's showing you that element. And that's also what the concept was, the goal. It tells you what they did, which is in terms of the bricks. That was the means by which they would achieve a name. But it says openly that we should make a name for ourselves. So you see that they felt that their philosophy had to be validated by something physical, which is also a flaw, another misconception. And that's the same exact threat that the Islamic terrorists had, and where they had to knock down the towers, because that eternal testament was something which was bothersome to them. So they had to get rid of that. That was too much of a threat, and they didn't have an answer. But you see, even they had this concept of eternity, that they would die and they'd go to heaven and have all the sensual pleasures, you know, forever. So they were even doing something based on the whole 72 versions, you know, that they this fantasy that they carried with them. They also were doing something based on a need for an eternal good, but a good in their assumption. Yeah, go ahead. Somebody had a point.
Yeah, you said they had to do away with powers. I got lost on what you were referring. They were trying to do away with
The name. See, the people here in Genesis, these people wanted to make a name for themselves. So the tower accomplished that. So the Twin Towers now is the same thing. It's a testament to America, but that poses a threat to the Islamic religion, to Islam. Because it goes against the whole philosophy of the United States and the West is against them. It's not democratic. It's also not Islamic. And that was embodied in these towers. That's what gave the United States the name. That's why the U.S. built these towers. They wanted to make a statement. So this is what became the target. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, were the towers the tallest buildings on the New York skyline?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was also New York, which was like the center. So there was a lot of gravity that these towers carried in the eyes of Islam. So this became something. Again, I'm just trying to show you how this is something which was always part of human nature. Something tall carries a certain amount of an impression. Something which lasts is what man wants. Something which validates his views. So he feels the structure is going to validate it. So the people that are opposed to those views, the structure, it does the opposite. It violates my personal views. If I'm from Islam, it has to be that way. Yeah, unless you're asking whether there was an element of immortality. Yes, for sure. That's whether they were making something, and then they. You see, there's another thing also in the verse. It says. I mean, is that clear, Doug? Okay. And again, the point is that by making something which is very substantial, very impressive, it's a testament to the builders and then whatever philosophy that they have, and by, you know, ipso facto, then it has to be a threat to others. But you see also it said another couple of things in the verse. The verse is, you know, it's amazing how much information is here. It says they're going to make a tower, but then it says, and its top in the heavens. And it also says, perhaps we'll be scattered upon the face of the earth. So let's see if we can understand those elements now. Now that we just, you know, we have this, the foundation over here of this topic. So let's see if we can look into more of the specific details that God is imparting to us by isolating, you know, certain statements that these people made. So they said that they not only want to make a tower, but the top of the tower should be in the heavens. Number two, perhaps, or lest, like God forbid, that we should be scattered upon the face of the earth. What are those two elements now?
I was wondering about whether the scattered on the face of the earth was, you know, if we don't do anything, we'll just marry a bunch of people and we'll be in various places and we'll just be sort of homogenous like everybody else and not distinct. And so in order to be distinct, we need to gather together and do this very distinct thing that separates us from everybody else.
I would agree, yes. I mean, to isolate, maybe that's what... See, I was thinking that also when it said in the beginning that they traveled from the east, because east can also mean from before. They traveled from before others. So perhaps isolating oneself is a way to reject others too, and then to create a unified whole, have a distinct nature. Well, I didn't find support for that. Everybody seems to be saying the word Mekedem means from the east. So I'll have to look further on that. But why would that be important? That would be my question. I would assume that everything in these verses would have to contribute to profiling these people. Unless... Yeah, go ahead, Doug. You mean like when they go to the islands and they isolate themselves from any influence from the other cultures?
Well, that's kind of the radical end of it, but the more homogenous end might be that, not homogenous, but the more Western end of that might be that, you know, the Christians like to gather and live in Christian communities, and the Mormons with the Mormons, and the Catholics with the Catholics, and the Jewish people have community with
Yeah, it definitely, and there's a reason for that. And that's what they said at the end, perhaps we'll be scattered. Meaning, I believe that that's expressing another threat that they felt. That since their ideas are really not based in something true, so the only way you can gain truth is this thing called truth in numbers, or strength in numbers. People feel if enough, even today, this is definitely an accepted view, and people follow this. If enough people are doing something or saying something or acting a certain way, people will give credibility to it. And I believe that's what the threat that they had. Perhaps we'll be scattered upon the face of the earth means that let's keep our numbers. This way we have significance. But if it's only a few people here and there, and we're not big numbers, so then it doesn't seem that we have much power to it. And you see that Islam has that too. They have this thing every year where they have a giant pilgrimage to Mecca, and it's called Hajj, and they stay there and they do all those rituals, but they do it, hundreds and thousands of millions of people do this simultaneously. They converge. So here you have an event where masses are doing something. See, you see anybody who everybody thinks there's something to it then. Because look, you know, and it could be that's why it was constructed that way, you know, by the originators of this religion. They saw that when you have numbers, it now creates an argument. But it's not an argument that stands at all because it's not based on truth. But people do respect numbers. So that's something which is significant. And what also is, you know, phenomena, what creates culture is the fact that people have a need for self-esteem. Everybody has a need to be liked and to have a good self-image. And the only way I can have a good self-image is through the applause and recognition of others. So what must I do? I must not deviate. Deviate would be suicide. So therefore I follow what I'm bored into, and I'm duped into the assumption that so many other people are doing it, there must be some truth to it. I don't really have to question the status quo of this religion, and it must be true, and I'm going to gain my self-esteem by following it, and all these emotions are at play. Although it doesn't contribute anything to the veracity of these religions. Unless, let me see what you're writing. You're saying, by making the tower reach into the heavens, it would show that they are their own masters, because they are reaching into heaven, which in their mind is the abode of God. All right, that was one view that they went up to, they were going up to God. There was another view also, which I think Ibn Ezra says, he says, clear, these people are intelligent. And they did not think, let me read to you his exact words. One second. Yeah, they weren't fools, that they thought that they can go up to the heavens. That's Ibn Ezra. All right. But you see, I think that this concept of the top and the heavens. So, what is that? Let's see if we can answer that. Because they already said they made a tower. Why does a top have to be in the heavens? So making a tower perhaps gives a name. But in order that you have the greatest name over everybody else, that's what I believe the top in the heavens means. Something which was not done before. I think, Doug, you said this earlier. That it's not enough just to make a name for yourself. That's one element. But making a name for yourself doesn't mean that you don't have direct competition. Doesn't mean that somebody else isn't as great. So the top of the tower in the heavens, there was another element of the emotion that they were chasing after, to be the best. But again, you see, all this is just an attempt to validate a view, and they feel that having a structure is going to validate it, which in fact, a structure can validate. If the view is true, it's true. If it's false, it's false. But they were working under the very strong social emotions, and these went unchecked, and they merely acted them out. And this has not changed at all. People are still building these tall skyscrapers. Ask them why, they can't tell you. But you see, it's clear. The pasuk, the verse, is isolating. Pretty much every word over here is telling you some new element to profile what the nature of these people were. Okay. And the rest of the account, it goes into God's response to them, that, as Rabbi Chait explained, that the very beginning, the opening verse, it says that they were all of one language. So Rabbi Chait says a very remarkable explanation on this. You should really get a hold of he has a tape on it. And he explains how, and you see that first it opens up that they're one language. And then after they want to build this tower, so you look at verse... let's go to 5 and now read to the end, just so we have the whole story here. So it says, after they expressed their whole plan, so it says, God went down to see the city and the tower, which the sons of man built. And God said, behold, they are one nation, and they have one language to all of them. And this is what they plan to do. And now, they will not be held back from doing what they want to do, meaning... they're not going to restrain themselves. This is a plan, and they're going full speed ahead. So God says, let us go down and confuse their language, that each man will not understand the language of his friend. So God scattered them from on the face of the land, and they ceased building the tower. Clearly, they ceased because now they couldn't speak to each other. They had no communication. And this is where the 70 languages came from. And the last verse says, therefore the place was called Bavel, because there God had confused the language of the entire earth, and from there he scattered them, God scattered them on the face of the earth. So Rebbe Chaim said a very interesting, you know, really remarkable insight. He said that if you look at communist Russia, so part of their theology that was central was atheism. And explained the reason for that is that there's something called aggression. It's one of the many emotions that God built every human being with. And aggression is not something that you ever get rid of. And it's a necessary component. Of course, it has to be used constructively. But the only way you can express aggression towards your peer is if he's different than you. In communist Russia, everything was controlled. Nobody had any more wealth than anybody else. Everybody was identical. And when that happens, it's impossible to find a basis for which to express your aggression to somebody else, because he's no different than you. But since aggression has to be expressed, there's only one area that they can express their aggression, and that's towards God. And that's why atheism became part of that culture. And that's why some of the commentaries here say that these people built a tower to fight against God. Meaning here the Torah is telling you at the outset, as Rabbi Chaim explained, that they're all one language. Meaning, just like in communist Russia, they had a tremendous identity with each other, here too. Here too, this group of people had a tremendous identity, and they all looked at each other equally, and the language, which was all one, added to that. It made them so cohesive, and there was no way for them to have the natural expression of aggression towards people. Today, you have a friend that's a little different than you. You could make a joke. You could be a little sarcastic. There's many healthy expressions of aggression that have to be outletted. You can't bottle up certain things. Certain things you can. Certain emotions you can put restraint on. So what God did was, that's why he changed the language. That's why the solution was, by breaking up their languages from one into 70 languages, now God gave them a basis by which this guy is different than me. And now the aggression can be expressed. They left off from having any more attack on God. And now there was no reason to destroy these people. In the case of the flood, society was so destroyed. It was Rashi says that God sealed the fate of that generation of the flood because of robbery. Meaning there was actually no respect towards another human being. And men took women from anyone that they wanted, the officers, where they would, there was no restraint. So there was no type of a backdrop for which a good society could emerge. So they had to be wiped out. But here, Rashi says, you learn that great is peace, but where animosity is hated by God. So in the case of the flood, there was animosity from one man to the other. So that's hated by God. Hated means that it just can't work. Society can't work anymore. So everybody was destroyed by a flood. But here they at least had the backdrop of peace. They had brotherly love over here. So there was no need to kill them. All that was needed was to rectify some problem. The problem was this identity that they had with each other that was bred due to the identical language. So all God had to do is just confound the language, as the verse says. And that was enough to differentiate them, that they could break up this group, break up the plan, have an outlet towards each other in terms of natural aggression, and then society was able to flourish. Right, so you see the opening verse saying that they're all of one language is not superfluous. It's not it's not a unnecessary thing. And you see, since it's repeated at the end, that that's exactly what God addressed, it shows you that's essential to the story. But you see, all the emotions and everything that's going on in the world today, you have the lessons right here in the Torah. Nothing, God didn't miss any points. Man today is simply acting out based on the design, and all the design of human nature has been given to us. And it's just a matter of taking the time to let like Rebbe Chaim explained, he says, that, let the words speak to you. Whenever you're reading the Torah, so there's tremendous knowledge there. And it's written in such a concentrated way and a deep manner that going through it slowly and repetitively, you'll start seeing certain things, certain inconsistencies. Certain words will be repeated. Certain things are out of place. And it's not, we are conditioned, you know, by American upbringing, that when you read a book, it has pages, you read through it, you get the facts, and that's it. There's nothing to it. There's no studying and analysis of every single verse and every single word. So that we have to break away from. And if we can break away from that, we can look at a verse as a new adventure. Okay, what jam-packed amount of information am I going to derive from this verse? I mean, God wrote this verse. He articulated it to Moses, and Moses wrote it down. So there has to be tremendous wisdom there. So it should be very exciting, you know, when any time we open a verse, and if we come to it with this type of an expectation and anticipation and patience, then we will be fortunate enough to see the lessons. So I think this is just is another case, you know, as we're going through Kohelis, we see that too. We've been seeing that for years now, how a tremendous amount of wisdom is there. Okay, let me stop here and see if there's any questions or comments.
We're good here.
No, you see, it's an amazing amount of ideas in this just one verse. You know, all the needs are there. The need for having something eternal. I can't value something unless it's eternal. We've got to be better than others. I mean, again, these are all wrong ideas, of course, in terms of their expression. But it clarifies, the multifaceted design of the human psyche and what man is looking for, what he's looking for to give him a sense of value. And how he's going to validate it, you know, assuming that structures are going to now make his ideas true.
So, I presume there is a difference between people who are doing the one-upmanship thing on making the tallest building in the world, and a person who just decides, look, I've got a city lot, I'm going to build a 50-story office.
No, of course not. I agree with you that, you know, a person who buys land, he wants, you know, anybody in business wants to make the most out of his investment. And buying a piece of land and building something that only has 10 stories is not going to yield the same rent as if it has 100 stories on the same piece in the same parcel. So it's purely practical. Of course, you know, there's nothing wrong with beautifying it to make it attractive, you know, inside for the residents. Outside, in terms of prospective residents for the stores, like they made in Columbus Circle in Manhattan a couple of years back, these new towers. So they made something very tall, of course, but they did it. You know, they did it very intelligently to make it very appealing, to lure in the biggest name brands, to make fantastic restaurants and entertainment. Like it's its own culture in these two buildings. And a lot of hype is built around it, but there's nothing wrong with that. That's a person who wants to make a living, so they'll do it intelligently. But like you're saying, here it's purely a practical case. That's practical. But sometimes when you want to make something the tallest, if that's really the goal, I shouldn't say sometimes, all the time. That is exactly what this verse is telling us. It's top in the heavens. Meaning something which is going to, it's a competitive statement now. Now it's not practical anymore.
Rabbi, is there any remnants of the Tower of Babel today?
I don't know. I never heard of any of that in terms of archaeological digs. I'm not even sure how far they got with it. So it would be hard to identify it if it was nothing. It could be, let's say, they made something that only reached the same height as other things in the area. So you wouldn't be able to identify it, really. I don't know how far along God let them go before. It seems to be it's a response to their very plan. They even said, you don't even know how far they got in terms of making the bricks. They just said, let us make the bricks, right? Come, let us make the bricks, and we'll burn them well. And we'll do all this and have a plan. So they had a plan, and it seems to be immediately upon their plan, God stepped in. So was it even built? Doesn't seem that way from the verse. It's something we assume, and all the illustrations that we've seen, somehow they creep into our consciousness, and it's something which we accept. Without further research, I couldn't comment on that. It just from the verses, it doesn't indicate that they even made anything.
Rabbi, was there something in the Talmud or some source that suggested that they had gotten it to the point where it took a year to get a stone up to the top, and that it?
Oh, it could be. If you could find that, I would love to see that.
Okay. I've heard it, but I don't know from where. They were more concerned about the stone than they were if somebody fell off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Maybe I'll look into it and see if I can locate it also. I never heard that, though. But listen, there's plenty I've never heard of. It's only, very, very short lives we have. And unfortunately, I haven't, learned more than a fraction of what's out there. But if you come across it, I would definitely like to see it. I'll try to look into it myself. Sure. All right, so I guess we'll wrap up here. That's what I wanted to discuss with today. And it was just, some insights that had come up over the week. So I thought I'd share it with everybody. So we'll continue. We'll go back to Kahalas next Sunday. All right?
Sounds good. Thanks, Rabbi.
Okay, everybody. So have a good week.
You too.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Okay.
Well, everybody, have a good week. Bye-bye.